What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Nature Backed, a show where we speak with investors and entrepreneurs about the green economy. My name is Tarmo Virki, and today my guest is Frank Meehan from OpenESG. Thank you, Frank, for joining us at Nature Backed.
Oh, thank you, Tarmo. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you again.
Yeah. Tell us in a few words. I mean, you're now involved with OpenESG. You've been in the ESG world for quite a while. What's your take on the ESG these days?
Taking a step back on that, I mean, I have been. I started in, 2017. I co-founded a firm, an investment firm out of Australia called Spike Labs Cultivate, which invests in climate, food, and agricultural tech solutions. And quite early on, when it was still in a quite a nascent phase, obviously now it's super hot, but we've really been focused on this for quite some time now, 7 years investing into the space. And that now has evolved to a firm called Cultivate Funds Management, which is out of Australia, which is now $100 million fund investing into climate, food, and agriculture with about 40 investments. And then also giving a bit of context to the listener, I started a firm called Equilibrium.ai in 2019, which was acquired by a US company called FiscalNote in 2021. And we manage global corporates ESG data, right? So we like all carbon management plus everything to do with ESG, biodiversity, water management, everything from a social and governance, and helping them suck in all of that data into a corporate level and then helping them with the reporting. And now I've just joined the OpenESG team, which is completely transforming the ESG ratings and showcasing system. So how to showcase how sustainable you are from a product and a company level. And that's changing it to making it completely free, fast, open, and dynamic to get a score, to get rating, to show how sustainable you are. And then you can get verified and improvements on the professional plans. So really understand this space and always very tremendously excited by it. ESG is only going to increase. Now, what's super interesting, of course, is ESG is the lightning rod now for some elements in the US election. But that doesn't change the game to me. For what I see in the market, everything is very, very still extremely focused from an environmental perspective. I'm going to give you a great example. I was working with one of the leading packaging manufacturers in the world, and they are so focused now. The founder is, you'd say, is fairly close to the Republican Party, probably not, just you'd think that they are, because the founder not at all focused on ESG. In fact, that company is probably one of the most advanced in sustainable packaging on the planet, because they know that they have to sell their pack here and to Walmart and et cetera. And the demands from those companies are, sort of Republican CEO-led company. It's like that, but it's not. It's extremely focused on becoming sustainable. And you'll see as well, the recent case in the US of, I don't know if you saw this, but a bunch of kids who happen to be 13, 14-year-old working in a chemical company in, I think it was Kentucky. That company is a large corporate whose ultimate investor is Blackstone, And Blackstone is like horrified now to find out that one of its investments happens to be using 13-year-old child labor in Kentucky in a chemical plant, right? You have to find this stuff out. And the only way out is to start to have total transparency and openness. And then, you know, with all the issues around governance with FTX, et cetera, crazy. FTX got rated by Morningstar, one of the top ESG agencies, with a better governance score than Chevron. I mean, just because people just accepted what it was, right? You know, and of course it didn't have any governance at all. So I think, you know, I believe that the ESG space, you know, it needs to get a reset, which is what Open ESG is trying to do, to make it open and transparent. It's been a total closed cartel. I mean, I can really understand some of the criticisms of it, but I do think that, you know, with the changes coming, when you start to apply transparency and openness, it's going to take off.
By the cartel, you mean it's a little bit like the drinks industry, probably where I've been involved, where basically you run the international competitions for drinks, and then out of 1,000 participants, 800 win medals, and then those 800 put those medals as a stickers on their bottle, and you know, basically buy those medals for $500 or $1,500 each.
Chamo, that's a great example of exactly how it works right now. It really is. It's like you pay to play. You go to companies like EcoVadis, which dominates this space. And for any, so I, let's say I'm Microsoft, right? I want to go out and I need to try and find out all my suppliers, or Apple. I need to rate them. I need to understand them. I need to understand supply chain. I need to understand suppliers. Right now, I send out these forms, these EcoVadis forms, or similar systems, then that supplier has to pay. They have to pay just to get started. So then they fill out this form, and then they might get this gold, silver, bronze certificate, which is kind of arbitrary, but you're effectively paying for it. And the more you pay, the kind of more it seems to get better. But you, if you then want to showcase that certificate, you've then got to pay more. And then if you want to, if you've improved anything, if you've got like, you know, better biodiversity, better water usage, you've got to go through the whole process again to be completely manual. And as you say, it's still like this old school certificate stick on a bottle type approach. You know, that has to change. And I think that, you know, companies like OpenESG, where you've got this, you know, it's totally transparent, you know. The system is controlled by a DAO, right? You know, the council, which is the, of experts around the world, is under a DAO structure. It's not influenced by the company. And then how that is put together is then, you know, spread out by the OpenESG system. And it's really applying the OpenAI principles to ESG, I think, is what's really required. But this is the same in climate as well. You know, we've had this issue with greenwashing and you know, carbon credits, et cetera. You know, transparency is desperately needed in the industry in general.
Exactly. The challenge is that people do speak more about the ESG, but we're basically talking about, you know, peanuts in a way. If we're talking about the color of the next certificate you are going to get from the certification body, while at the same time the climate change is accelerating around us, and something more drastic would need to be done for actually to change something.
Yeah, no, that's correct. I mean, exactly. Things are like not moving fast enough, no question. And one of the reasons they're not moving fast enough is we have not enough data. We don't know how companies are performing. We don't know really what the stage they're in. And also companies are frightened with the current systems because the current systems are very punishing. And they're arbitrary punishment as well, like with these ESG rating systems. Instead, you know, what OpenESG is doing is looking at how to change that and making it much more open and transparent, but also rewarding you for positive progress, right, for doing things positively. And I think we've had the same, that's the same thing that we do from a climate and an agricultural investment viewpoint. We're looking at companies that are doing that are really making positive steps forward. But you're absolutely right. Without the data, we can't accelerate things fast enough because, you know, one of the things is you can see corporates are trying to make a change. They're putting huge amounts of money into, for instance, agriculture to make it more regenerative farming. But without knowing the impact of that distribution of money and how practices are changing, it's very difficult to know where to go with that. So, you know, the Open ESG guys, they just signed with a company called Tingo in Africa, which has which is an agri fintech, which provides equipment and financing to 30 million farmers. And so they're going to be providing the system to 30 million farmers across Africa. And that helps AB InBev, et cetera, who are putting money into regenerative farming in Africa, to understand what's the impact and how to improve things faster and faster. It definitely is the case. Like, we have to accelerate faster. Mm.
But going forward, how do you kind of hope to get people to adapt the Open ESG principles? There is, you know, to some extent, the market is probably established, so to say, but you need to crack it to kind of use brains also in the process.
Yeah, I think it's like the taxi business before Uber, to be perfectly honest. You know, it really is. It is an absolute cartel. And, you know, the thing about Uber, what Uber, you know, T. Gambold, who's the co-founder of and CEO of OpenESG, says it very well. You know, what Uber did was it brought transparency to your ride. Like, it told you who your driver was and how you were going to get to your destination and how much it was going to cost. Three things which were not transparent at all with the taxi industry. And that's really why everything changed. And it's very similar in the ESG space. You know, it's a closed shop. It's not transparent about how things happen. It's incredibly manual. If you want to change or improve yourself, it takes ages to showcase it. And it's basically based on stuff 15, 20 years ago. So I think the way things have changed, it's totally right for disruption and change. How would you adopt it? Well, it's pretty simple. You've just got so many different corporates that are looking to change things and looking to rate their suppliers. So imagine that you've got 5,000, 6,000 suppliers. Like, a big agricultural company would have had that many. And you have to go and ask them to pay $1,500 to $2,000 just to get rated. I mean, it just doesn't happen, right? It's just so hard to make it happen. Now, and you say, hey, look, here's this new OpenESG system, which is there. You can also customize, ask extra questions, and it's free. And it's dynamic. So if you've changed anything, it's immediately reflected. And if you lie about what you're doing, that's also visible, because everything you say is going to be visible on a web page. And then we can go and verify you later when we need to do the auditing process. And so we've had corporates jump at, so particularly in this current environment when corporate spending has to be reined in, everyone's looking be sensible with cash. The time is now. It really is for change.
Mm-hmm. I think the economic climate can clearly help it. The other part which can clearly help it is probably media. If the data is free and, you know, rating, kind of reviewing the ratings or reviewing the greenwashing, there's surely a bunch of journalists out there who would be more than happy to actually find their next scoop out of their public data.
Oh, that's right. Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, again, apparent. And it's also about rewarding company. Is positivity isn't embraced enough.
Exactly. Going forward, I mean, ESG has been in the headlines a lot, especially in the US, I think, but also elsewhere, and not always for the good reasons, or at least not with kind of the positive notes in the news headlines. What's your take on it? You know, is it actually positive for the sector, the bashing ESG sometimes gets, because people are actually recognizing and noticing it, or could it actually damage the industry for the good?
I think it's a very good question. Some of the criticisms of current ESG systems are very valid, right? As I said beforehand, it's closed. It's onerous. Like, the forms that come out of MSCI and other are just ridiculously huge and long. It's very manual. Like, you know, pay approach that, you know, eco have advocated up to now is difficult. So I think there's some very, very valid criticisms. Is it, at the end of the day, the whole thing was set up, one, to help companies become more environmentally and eco-conscious and showcase that. How to improve your, like, from a social perspective and improve, you know, diversity in the workforce, but also ensure that, you know, things like child labor and everything are removed out of your supply chain. Better governance, and boy, do we need better governance after, you know, the recent scandals across here, and particularly, I mean, looking at Silicon Valley Bank and First Republic and, you know, FTX and everything, which is just failures of governance. I think that, you know, it's needed. I don't think anyone complains about that. And your biggest investors, the Black Rocks and Fidelities and Blackstones, are all driving heavily on ESG because they know ultimately they have to do it. It's really those guys that make things. What I think is that things do need to change. And I think the Open ESG system, applying the principles of AI and Web3 to ESG world, is exactly what's required. You know, open and transparency is needed. Make it free. Dynamic is important. Change. It's really about where it is right now and how it needs to go forward. But it's exact industry before Uber, to be honest.
Maybe I'm a little bit repeating myself, but if you would kind of look forward next 12 months, the late 23, mm-hmm. Early 24, for what are the biggest challenges for the OpenESG?
Well, I think, you know, the challenge is going to be, I'm hoping the challenge is keeping up, right? Mm-hmm. But the good is, moving from this, you know, you fill out this form, you send it off to EcoVadis, and they have these manual teams that check out everything before you ever get a score or certificate. This way is all digital. It's all open. It's heavily, you know, it's going to be heavily AI driven in terms of helping to source data. And it's instant when you get the approach, because you just get it instantly. So it's moved digital approach. I believe that, to be honest, in keeping up with demand from what we've done so far from initial work before it goes live and the beta programs, it's probably keeping up with demand is going to be the issue. It's going to be tremendously exciting to stay on top of things from that perspective and bring AI into the picture in a way which the team are working on. Mm. So I think it's one, keeping up with demand, or two, staying on top of keeping fresh and new as you keep going. Mm. Yeah. And proving to everyone that you are open and transparent, which is the expert council and DAO system.
Exactly. The DAO, using the DAO system sounds really, really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's game changing. I think you have to use, instead of the company like MSCI making up what the scores and systems are, by devolving it to an expert council, which is now like 50 people from around the world, you know, working on the system and developing it under a DAO structure, and then voting on that using, I think it's using Discord. So it works very well. And that, again, gives transparency to the whole thing.
Mm, absolutely. Also, DAO has had some of setbacks, I think, related to all the crisis in the crypto mm-hmm. space over the last 12 months. But there are some really cool uses of DAO structure, like the one you guys are building on.
Yeah, I think DAO, look, I'm an investor in Messari, you're in OpenSea, we're in Genies, you know, we're quite heavily into the Web3 blockchain space, but never really got in the, you know, the crypto exchange space, which I always felt was, you know, I just was like, what the hell's going on? And FTX pretty much showed, and all the others, 3 hours, etc., that there was a lot of, you know, stuff going on there, to be perfectly honest. And DAO running your entire company, it is a difficult challenge. But the way that we've got it in terms of an expert council DAO looking at a system that is going to then be implemented by a company works well.
Mm. Yeah, one of the really interesting kind of related developments we've seen is that how because of FTX and all the other, from one side, the FTX and all the other crypto exchanges, of course, crashed the crypto market last year. But from the other side, the kind of the maybe the second level of those impacts on the actual banks has crashed the banks, and the Bitcoin is probably around 30K again or more these days. Talking about the crypto crisis when the Bitcoin is at 30,000 is a little bit silly, or sounds at least a little bit silly.
Exactly. But I do think, you know, putting crypto to one side, I think that just blockchain and Web3 is tremendously exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the other big things that I find very exciting, you know, being into climate and agriculture and food, you know, I do a lot. We've just done a blue sequestration project in Australia. We're looking at others around the world in soil and biotech in terms of carbon capture in soil. It's so tremendously exciting. What I think is going to be interesting is the tokenization of real world assets. And I think that's very exciting. That is another space that I predict is going to be one of the biggest sectors within the space, because you can, you know, we're looking at like how to finance climate projects, you know, physical projects. I think tokenization of that is really interesting. I mean, last year, before the 3-hour crash, it was honestly, tokens was just about lending each other digital money. And it was just, I mean, it was just an arbitrage game. Mm. That hopefully has blown up. Now, like going back to the principles of what blockchain and Web3 is all about is good, right? That whole arbitrage game is gone, thankfully, and hopefully, you know, for a while anyway. And now what a lot of people are looking at is how to tokenize real-world assets, and particularly climate projects. That, I think, is very exciting.
Exactly. And, you know, in climate projects also the projects related to reforestation or afforestation, and the kind of the creating the natural carbon sinks and so on. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on in that sector.
Oh, tremendously, tremendously exciting. I mean, you know, the blue carbon stuff that we're working on, you know, sequestration projects, you know, soil. One of the things we're a big investor into is a company through cultivators, a company called Future Feed in Australia, which is seaweed supplements for cattle. You put, you know, seaweed supplements that have gone through a particular process developed by the CSIRO in Australia. And that, if you put that into the cattle feed, and it reduces their meat by 60-70%. Now, there's a number of those solutions around the world. This one just won a prize from Bloomberg and is doing really, really well. I think that these type of projects are tremendous. You know, producing the seaweed for that project and the production of that is the next stage that we're looking at. You know, as I said, you know, drones, robotics, anything that is really, really doing stuff on the ground. Like what I have been very frustrated by a lot of corporates just buying carbon credits and not actually doing anything to reduce their carbon. And I think that is changing. And I'm very proud of the Australian government that has recognized that and has now literally putting into law that you cannot buy terrible carbon credits anymore. There's a very strict rule if you're going to buy carbon credits. And you have very high incentives to actually make change in your organization to decarbonize and actually decarbonize. And I think, you know, good on the Aussie government for changing that. But that's because what happened last year is the Australian government was the original Australian government, which is totally anti-climate, anti-everything, was trying to stop everything, was thrown out by the Australian people. And it was a climate-driven election. And the new government was elected on a climate stance, and that has made a difference. And I believe that's going to happen in other countries. It's not just going to be in Australia. I mean, we feel it more than anything. But in some ways, Lula in Brazil, it was a similar thing. Climate in the Amazon was quite a dominant factor in that election, and I believe that's going to continue to increase. So I don't think the whole thing's back in the bag, Tambo. I think and it's going to get better. It just needs better systems and better governance like OpenESG to make it happen.
Absolutely. That's really, really, really good stuff on the carbon credit side also. I think I think for me personally, the biggest challenge has been the understanding that most companies use carbon credits as the and the Catholic Church was selling indulgences in the medieval times that, you know, you've sinned, now you pay and you get a paper to say that, you know, your sins have been forgiven. I mean, that's basically the carbon offset market of today, right?
Oh my God, yeah. As a Catholic who went to Catholic school all of my life, Jesuit school, having spent a lot of time in confession over the years, probably quite rightly, you know, in there. It was great. It was fantastic to go, you know, when you're a kid, to go into confession and walk away with a few Hail Marys and be cleansed of your sins. And it's exactly the approach, 100% right. Thankfully, though, you know, you've got a better understanding of that now. You know, I don't think that person is there anymore, but at a major shipping company a few years ago, at this big plantation down in, I don't know, it was Panama or something, and that's what they were doing to help the environment. And every year he'd go down there 3 times a year to check out the plantation to make sure it's going well. And he's very proud about it. And I was sitting there thinking, okay, dude, like, you haven't done anything in the ship industry, have you? Like, nothing. And you've got this huge plant forest that you've using to offset the issues that you have with the ships. Plus, you're probably flying down there first class with half your team to check out Panama 3 times a year. Like, wow, dude, like, you're right. Well ahead of the game here, aren't you? I think as companies starting to recognize that approach is just not going to work anymore. Mm. And that kind of, honestly, like, some of the, you know, people were cruising, you know, they were just like, oh, I don't really have to do anything this year and that's fine. You know, that is going out the window. I firmly believe in a lot of stages. But also, you know, look, there's a fantastic positive energy that I'm very positive about things, you know, to be honest. I know people are kind of negative about it, but, you know, being in the industry and seeing all the change and things that are happening, great technology that's coming through, I'm very positive about it. Look at Texas. Texas is one of the most largest renewable energy states on the planet, yet it's the hardcore Republican, yet it's very, very heavily into renewable energy. Ultimately, it's all going in the right direction, I believe. It's some countries are going to take longer to get there than others. But I think, you know, look at the US. The US, it's the Biden administration's push to subsidize heavily tree technology manufacture and development in the US has changed the game. I was talking to a company that was been previously thinking about doing that in Europe, and they're like, no, we're going to go completely set up in the US because the subsidies we get to start the business in the US is tremendous. Now, hopefully we don't end up with the same issues that Obama had with Solyndra and solar and all type of stuff. We may do, but it's changing the game. Manufacturing's coming back to the US, and it's coming back around new battery and EV technologies. I think that's fantastic. So I do think that changes are happening in the right way. And you know, a lot of people, you know, say negative things, maybe probably largely from a clickbait perspective. You know, if you'd read the Daily Mail every day, you think the world is ending. But I generally think that it's not, and that things are pretty positive.
Thanks, Frank. That's a really good message to wrap up this podcast episode.
Introducing the Deep Leadership Podcast. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former submarine officer who spent 22 years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters. Leadership matters. Deep Leadership is real-world, actionable leadership advice from John and his expert guests. Become a leader worth following. Subscribe today.
Electric Acid. Hi, I'm Lessa Gaudette, host of Her Extraordinary Life by Design podcast, where we celebrate women who are shaping their lives one extraordinary day at a time. I speak with women from all over the world about what they do and how they are passionately pursuing their dreams and creating meaningful impacts on their communities. So come join us and learn about all there is to learn about these extraordinary women.
Electric Acid.